Good morning. I will convene the House Education Finance Committee today. And with that, our first order of business is the minutes for March 5th, 2024. Representative Purcell.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes from March 5th.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Jordan.
Madam Chair, I did find a typo in one of our testifiers' names.
Thank you, Representative Jordan.
I believe her name was Emily Carrillo Arzapalo from Stillwater High School. That was, I think, how she pronounced your name yesterday.
Yes, we will double-check that, make sure we get it right. With that, Representative Purcell, would you like to move the minutes as corrected?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Purcell and Representative Jordan. Any questions on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no. The minutes from March 5th, 2024 are adopted. With that, the first item on the agenda is House File 4518. And we will have Vice Chair Clardy take over here. What I move to the testifier table.
So our next agenda item is House File 4518. Chair Joachim, would you like to move House File 4518 before the committee with the intention to re-refer it to the Committee on Ways and Means?
Yes, Chair Clardy, I will move House File 4518 before the committee with the intention of moving it, re-referring it to Ways and Means.
You may present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Clardy. Good afternoon. Chair Clardy and members, thank you for hearing House File 4518 today. This is a forecast adjustment bill. The bill makes adjustments to fiscal year 2024 appropriations to match the February 2024 forecast data to the best estimates of the state aid required for each K-12 program and appropriation. Generally, a change in estimated pupil counts or a change in program participation is the most likely cause of the forecast adjustment. I believe listening to the forecast, our economists had said actually it was some change in special education funding as well. The changes in the appropriation are real and the changes must be enacted into law. But adjustments have no fiscal impact when measured against the K-12 budget because the changes are already built in the forecast estimate of the budget base. So with that, members, I'm open for questions.
Lead Krisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if there's other ones, I can yield, but I just have a couple quick comments. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair Joachim. As standard practice, this is one of the bills that we must listen to and look at. And my questions are actually for Mr. Strom. Mr. Strom, come on. Is there any tomfoolery in this?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Strom.
Representative Krisha, this is things you passed last year.
Madam Chair.
Lead Krisha.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair, obviously the biggest change here, and we do this a lot, is we have adjustments in the actual pupil counts, and we have to account for that. And I think it's in the purview of this committee that we move this along, have those conversations in Ways and Means, and make the adjustments. What I would just add is, and the reason I ask that, obviously your trust and your character is impeccable. Still getting used to the beard. But this is not a supplemental budget. This is not by any means an increase in anything we've done. We're just making adjustments off of what we've done and certainly need to do that and keep that certainty going. So just with that, I would recommend that we pass this out of committee and we'll address your tomfoolery in Ways and Means.
Thank you, Lead Krisha. With no members of the public that signed up to testify, Chair Joachim, do you have any final words on this bill?
No, thank you, members. Please vote yes.
And with that, Chair Joachim renews her motion that House File 4518 be re-referred to the Committee of Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails. House File 4158 is re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. I'll now give the gavel back to Chair Joachim.
Madam Chair, I think you did a fine job. If you keep us moving this pace, you should stay there. Second by Senator Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Would you like to move House File? Get to my note, T4171 before us.
So move, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I move that House File 4171 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. I was just going to add that. You are absolutely correct. And then with that, Representative Jordan, why don't you go ahead and with House File 4171 before us, proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. The indoor environment of our schools has profound impacts on learning outcomes, short-term health and long-term health, attendance, teacher retention, and importantly, on energy costs and our climates. We have all heard from students and staff in our buildings who have taught or tried to learn in extreme temperatures. And as the climate of our planet changes, this will become an increasingly common occurrence. Utility bills are also amongst the highest costs for schools. Investing in energy efficiency reduces energy usage and decreases monthly energy costs. Reducing energy usage also reduces greenhouse gas emissions, which helps schools achieve their own climate goals. House File 4171 removes two barriers for school districts interested in pursuing upgrades to buildings to realize benefits of improving their energy efficiency. One is through allowing heating system improvements to qualify for a capital grant or loan under the maximum effort school aid law, and the other is to allow energy efficiency projects to qualify under the long-term facilities maintenance revenue fund qualifications, or LTF. Whether it is to create a more healthy and comfortable learning environment, reduce energy costs, to maximize federal funds, to meet climate goals, or all of the above, House File 4171 will provide schools with greater flexibility to reach those goals. And to be clear, this bill does not require school districts to make any changes to their energy systems. It just provides some flexibility for districts interested in seeking those out. Finally, there are also new federal funding opportunities that members should be aware of for schools that will be available in the next 10 years. Thanks to Congress's Inflation Reduction Act, there is actually a great letter in your packet that you can reference on those federal programs and how that will boost energy efficiency aid. So this bill was brought to me by Fresh Energy, and I know that they will be here. They're here to testify. We also have an educator that will be testifying. And we're continuing to have conversations with students, parents, educators, and district officials. The bill is still being worked on to make sure schools reap the financial benefits of energy efficiency improvements. And I've already been working on an amendment to include districts in developing the reporting requirements required by the bill. There's also a fiscal note in your packet and some more testimony. But with that, Madam Chair, I think we can move to testimony.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. And with that, are we going to go vote first? Okay. With that, we have Joe Dammel, Managing Director of Buildings from Fresh Energy. Please state your name for the record and the organization and proceed.
Thank you and good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Joe Dammel, and I'm the Managing Director of Buildings at Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization based here in Minnesota, and for the past 30 years, we've been advocating for policies to achieve an equitable carbon-neutral economy. And we appreciate the opportunity to testify on House File 4171. Minnesota has made great strides in decarbonizing the electric sector. Thanks to the leadership of the legislature, we are now on a path to 100% carbon-free electricity by 2040. Now, to avoid the worst impacts of climate change, we must turn our attention to other sectors of the economy, like buildings, which is what I focus on. Reducing emissions in buildings is achieved through many different pathways, and they can include energy efficiency through insulation, maintaining and updating existing HVAC systems, and investing in new energy systems that can utilize network geothermal systems or installing solar panels, just to name a few. No two buildings are alike, and additional flexibility will allow the districts that manage their buildings to access and unlock additional tools and resources. The good news is that improving energy systems comes with a multitude of benefits, not only for climate, but for students, staff, utility costs, and critically, learning outcomes. Improving energy systems can protect students from excessive heat and poor air quality, and it helps create a comfortable, healthy environment where kids can focus on learning. A study done by the Harvard School of Public Health reviewed over 200 scientific studies on the impacts of the school environment on students' well-being. This report found that environmental factors within the school building itself, where students spend a significant portion of their developmental years, directly impact student health, student thinking, and student performance. And this means that investing in the building improvements is also an investment in student health, student thinking, and student performance. As Representative Jordan mentioned, there are unprecedented opportunities through the federal government that, for the first time, allow nonprofit entities like schools to receive direct pay reimbursements for clean energy projects through the Inflation Reduction Act. This federal money can cover up to 70% of the costs of these projects, and removing restrictions from the capital grant or loan program and the long-term facilities maintenance revenue fund will allow school districts to maximize federal opportunities and find cost-effective options that are specific to their needs. Improving health and learning outcomes, reducing costs, and drawing down greenhouse gas emissions are all benefits from energy improvements. Now, this bill will provide school districts with additional flexibility to find solutions that work best for their communities and maximize the federal investment in Minnesota. Thank you for your time today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much. Sorry, Director Dammel. Next up, we have Janie Atchison, social studies teacher at St. Paul Schools, remotely. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, my name is Janie Atchison, and I'm a 6th and 7th grade social studies teacher in St. Paul Public Schools. My classroom that I teach in, that I actually just stepped out of, was built in the 1930s as a part of the WPA program. This means the temperature is controlled by a boiler system during colder months, and there is no air conditioning during the warmer months. Research studies from Harvard, Stanford, the National Bureau of Economic Studies, as well as countless others, have shown what any of my students already know, that as temperature rises, learning decreases. In June of 2021, my classroom reached 94 degrees, and I know you can't really see it, but I have a photo that I'll send to Polly. I took a photo of it with the thermometer at 94 degrees. My students were miserable. The night before this, the district had sent a message to parents encouraging them to send their students with a damp cloth and water bottle to help cool them during the day, as if those two items could combat the effects of sweltering heat. Due to safety and liability concerns, my classroom windows only open about 3 inches, and half of my windows don't open at all, so only about half my windows open. This allows for minimal air circulation. Teachers attempted to make swamp coolers in hopes just to cool a section of their room or bring the temperature back into the 80s. I ask this rhetorically, but how much work would we all get done if we cranked the room that you're in to 90s, added high humidity, and had almost no air circulation? My best guess is we would do things as quickly as possible and then leave. My students and I did this for 7 days for multiple hours, or for 7 hours for multiple days. According to Professor Park, an environmental and labor economist at UCLA Department of Public Policy, for every 1 degree increase, it is a 1% decrease in student learning. And if you are trying to test students on those days, you are unable. You can just forget about it. My school, my district, is not alone. The American Council of Civil Engineering gives Minnesota school infrastructure a C-. From small rural districts to large urban areas, our students are suffering from this heat. It is an equity issue. Schools who can pass referendums to pay for new buildings do so, and students whose districts are unable to retrograde or outfit their building are forced to suffer. I urge this committee to consider adding FTLE or sustainable projects to long-term facility maintenance, so all students in our great state can learn in cool conditions, and I can promise you that all middle schoolers just want to be cool.
Thank you. Thank you, Teacher Janie Atchison. And you're right. Yesterday we were in this room at 3 o'clock for public education policy, and the vents had been turned off due to construction, and it was very warm, and all of us had a very hard time concentrating until they turned them back on again. So thank you for your testimony. With that, members, I had forgotten to turn to Mr. Strom. I just wanted to have him give a quick reminder about how to read a fiscal note that's in the packet for this bill, and what levy impacts look like when we touch a categorical like LTFM. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, There are two fiscal notes for today. The first is for House File 4171. Let me give you a minute of background, a reminder of how fiscal notes work, and then we'll talk about the specific fiscal note. And then there's also, in addition to the two fiscal notes in the first packet you had today, there's a printout, a district-by-district printout, of the current estimated amounts of long-term facilities maintenance revenue in each of the school districts. So that district-by-district run will show you the aid and levy amounts of the current program so that you can get some understanding of how your districts are currently utilizing that revenue. A fiscal note is prepared by the office at the Legislative Budget Office. Ms. Beckel is our expert in this committee on fiscal notes, but is still out today. The Department of Education, through Ms. Erickson's division, does a great job in preparing these for us. They'll have data on programs like LTFM, and they'll make assumptions and use that data in order to tell us what the potential impacts are. As Representative Jordan mentioned, there's going to be a bit of tightening with this bill, and that will help get a more refined levy estimate. But the fiscal note will do two things. On the front page, it'll summarize the state aid costs in thousands of dollars. And then toward the end of the fiscal note, it will put a note in on whether any additional staff will be necessary for the program. And then it'll usually summarize the levy costs as well. With the bill in its current form, the department at this time thought they could not estimate that levy cost. With the tightening, we hope we can get, with an amendment, we hope we can get that levy cost identified. By way of background for this committee, you track levies as well as aid increases. So you've given an informal levy target of zero over the baseline levy amounts. So any proposal that you pass out of this committee to Ways and Means that has a levy impact, you'll need to pay for out of your state aid target, essentially. So if levies went up $10 million, you'd essentially need to find $10 million elsewhere of levy reduction coupled with an aid increase to come to zero. So again, levy cost is just the same for you as an aid cost. So it's important to keep that in mind, that just because it doesn't fall to state aid doesn't mean it's free for you. So Madam Chair, the members can read through the fiscal note at their convenience and see the assumptions that were used. And when we get to the next fiscal note, we'll be able to go through that and identify specifically the levy costs with that one. Madam Chair, in a nutshell, that's a fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. There is real learning loss over summer, so thank you for us for reminding us about the levy impacts. And Representative Jordan, I know you're working on an amendment that wasn't quite ready by deadline, so thank you for doing that as well. With that, members, I will go to the table for questions. Representative Cresha.
Thank you, and again, I can yield to other questions, or I can go. What would you like?
Members, are there any other comments or questions at the table? Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. I am such a big fan, and also your testifier that said keep schools cool. Like, that's amazing. But we really do need to pass this. I love that it has the clean energy component to it. I think that's really great. But schools, students actually talk about this a lot when I meet with them. I have a large intern program, and a lot of the interns are here today, so I think that I'll tell them about this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Members, any further questions or comments? Seeing none, Representative Cresha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Jordan and the testifier. Just a couple, just clarification questions. First of all, to the testifier, Madam Chair, if Fresh Energy, if you could just explain your relationship. Obviously, you're supporting this, and then just what is your relationship to the schools as a nonprofit, and what role do you play? Just that way you can clarify for everyone.
Director Dammel.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. So, you know, Fresh Energy, I work on the buildings, and that one of our goals is to try to improve buildings, help buildings policy, help us build better buildings and retrofit better buildings. I think our involvement in schools has been both kind of long lasting in terms of other bills that we've worked on, especially the intersection with energy in schools, and then our almost a year ago, our new executive director has a deep background in the educational sector. And so I think she's helping us make connections with additional ways to leverage state and federal programs to benefit schools, because she's seen the importance of energy and healthy buildings on student performance.
Representative Cresha, follow up.
Thank you. Just a couple more. And so you have a new director. I guess I wasn't as familiar. And who is that new director? You said there's some expertise there?
Director Dammel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, our new director is Brenda Caselius.
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. Okay, and just to make sure, I just want to make sure, you know, the conversation's had, so thank you for that. And this could be for Mr. Strom or to the chair author, but as I understand this, this bill, you have in here that there be an additional project documentation to MDE for approval. Is there any documentation that would be required or permitted or passed on to the voters? Because this isn't a voter approved levy. I mean, this, they can reauthorize this without going to voter approved. So is there any documentation that's going to be required to put out to let people know why they're doing this?
Representative Jordan or Director Dammel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Kreisha. There is some documentation that would be required as though with MDE. That is part of the amendment that we're working on, is that districts would also be helping develop what that documentation would be in the reporting. But perhaps Mr. Strom could talk more about the documentation, as these are levy projects and what that would go to. So I don't know. Mr. Strom, if you can help me out here.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representatives Jordan and Kreisha. As I understand it, the advocates are working on an amendment that would help MDE in terms of describing exactly what categories these processes should be in, defining the categories so that they're comparable across districts, and also limiting the number of requirements that districts would have to make in order to identify each of these projects. So that process then goes into the LTFM plan. And the LTFM plan essentially is approved by the school board on a 10-year basis, and then is also sent to the department. So in terms of public notification, it would be as part of that adoption of the district's 10-year LTFM plan.
Representative Kreisha, follow-up.
Thank you. My last comment. So thank you for that, Mr. Strom. I would just encourage in that amendment that we strengthen the piece of letting the voters know. I mean, MDE, we're sending documentation to MDE, but they're not the voters. And so if we're going to do this and we already don't have voter approval, because it could be reauthorized, I think that transparency might strengthen your amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Any further comments? Representative Jordan, final comments for the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the discussion and the good ideas. I think this is something that, you know, our public schools benefit the public, and I think it's a pretty cool bill, and so I welcome all your help making it even better. So thank you. We'll keep her moving.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. And with that, I'll renew the motion that House File 4171 be laid over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Next up, we have Representative Vernig with House File 3558. Welcome to your committee, Representative Vernig. Would you like to move your bill before the committee with the intention of laying it over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill?
Yes, I would, please.
Thank you, Representative Vernig. House File 3558 is before us, and I believe that you have an amendment, the A1 amendment. Would you like to move that as well?
Yes, please.
Thank you. The A1 amendment's before us, members. Would you like to briefly explain what that does?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. In front of you today is House File 3558. This bill allows all schools...
Just to explain the amendment real quick and then we'll go
Oh,
on.
Sure. Sorry.
Yep.
The amendment is TA from... So it's an amendment based on TA from the department that includes... roof repair.
Perfect.
As well.
Thank you.
Roof replacement.
Just a clarifying, yes. Clarifying amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like.
Yes.
So with that, members, any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. With that, the A1 amendment is adopted. With that, Representative Vergen, go ahead and proceed with your description of your bill.
Sorry about that. But
no worries.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and committee members. In front of you, now, you have House File 3558. This bill allows all school districts to generate long-term facilities maintenance, it's an LTFM day, revenue for costs related to roof repair and replacement projects in excess of $100,000. It also requires school districts to include information on these projects in their LTFM plans. I represent two school districts, both with multiple buildings of various ages, and both have passed their most recent referendums. But a huge disparity exists between the two districts. There are the haves and the haves less. This bill aims to address that through modest changes to evolve LTFM and allow districts an opportunity to close that gap. LTFM was created to help close the funding gap between the 26 large districts that had attained Alternative Facilities Authority, or the haves. These districts could levy for deferred maintenance while everyone else was stuck at a small amount of state supported, the haves less. An equalized levy that would increase and catch up the alt facility schools was the original plan. But as they say, the best laid plans are often go awry. LTFM was designed to be focused on traditional deferred maintenance and eventually a program dedicated to facilities improvements was to be developed. This facilities improvement program would be perfect to address new emergent facilities needs, such as energy efficiency projects, single-user gender-neutral bathrooms, and the ever-evolving health services. In 2015, LTFM was created and was doing its job for the first few years. However, eventually it stalled out, and like the feds paying for special ed cross-subsidy, that facilities improvements program never actually materialized. Fast forward nearly a decade, and with workforce challenges, inflation, and the inflationary impacts of the pandemic, this disparity has only grown. It has gotten more expensive to maintain the upkeep of our educational settings. House File 3558 is a small step forward to evolve LTFM by allowing schools to better manage a major deferred maintenance need, such as roof repair and replacement. Roofs are already allowable under LTFM, but my bill would qualify roofs for projects that cost over $100,000, meaning schools can create additional equalized levy authority to pay for these projects. Most schools will likely bond over 20 years to pay for major roof replacements, helping to meter out that levy impact. My aim is to help schools be better able to tackle roof projects instead of doing them piecemeal over time, which is inefficient, more costly, and can consume limited amounts of LTFM dollars many of our medium and small schools have. There is more work to be done on school facility funding, but this is one step in ensuring a major piece of critical infrastructure is properly addressed. And I admit, roofs are not sexy, they don't write letters, they aren't great testifiers, and they only make the headlines when they collapse. But today, I have two testifiers who can speak on the importance of this bill. Bob Indahar is here with me with Minnesota Rural Educational Association. He co-chaired the School Facilities Task Force and helped develop these recommendations. And I also have Seth Putz, a facilities director from St. Peter Public Schools.
Thank you. And before we go to testifiers, I'll just have real quick have Mr. Strom go through the fiscal note again, just a reminder, and then we'll move on. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, the two documents to look at for this bill include the fiscal note for House File 3558 and the printout. Starting with the printout, you can see a column second from the left that's the alternative facilities marker. Just by way of background, what happened when alternative facilities was created was that school districts at that point in time were subject to overall levy caps more significant than now in the health and safety revenue program. And that program was jumping around in revenue and proration was occurring in the health and safety amounts. And one of the proposals from the executive branch in that year was to get the big districts out of that mix so that the health and safety revenue for other districts be easier to predict and easier to judge. This had the desired effect for health and safety, but created the situation that Representative Vernig described, where 26 of the largest school districts, based on their square footage and age of their facilities, can go ahead and make levy amounts in excess of the $380 formula amount for long-term facilities revenue. And so as you go up and down that list, you'll see districts that are quite a bit above the $380. Some of those are for qualifying health and safety projects, but most of the districts well above the $380 per pupil are the districts that have that mark in the second column of yes for having alternative facilities. So in terms of the fiscal note, this is an example where MDE was able to pull together great data for you. And in the fiscal note to 3558, on the first page, they describe the relatively small state aid impact, because this would be above the equalized aid amounts. And then as you get to the last page, on page 3, for the local fiscal impact, they describe the estimated levy effects. So the department went through calculations on the data they had, made a series of assumptions about how many roofs would be replaced and what kind of cost those would be, and then to turn that into a levy impact amount. So you can see there for fiscal year 26, which is the levies for pay 25, on the third page of the fiscal note, a $12.6 million levy increase starting in fiscal year 26. So for this committee's purposes, again, with a zero levy target, you'd need $12.6 million of your aid target, essentially, in order to proceed with this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. With that, Executive Director Indahar, would you like to please state your name for the record and proceed?
Yeah, my name's Bob Indahar, and I'm currently the Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association and a former superintendent at Moose Lake. Today I'm going to speak about long-term facility maintenance revenue and why House File 3558 is important to most schools in the state. With many topics in education that you're focused on right now, I appreciate you paying attention to one of the biggest inequities in the state, and that's how we fund educational facilities. To be blunt, rural districts can't understand why at 28 of the biggest school districts, the alternative facility districts, are able to budget for facility maintenance and health and safety without major statutory limitations, while the smaller districts are forced to budget within their capped amount of levy revenue, which does not keep up with inflation. This inequity has been going on since 1993, and as you'll see later, it's becoming more divergent in the coming years. Buildings wear out and need to be maintained the same, no matter if they're big, small, or where you're at in Minnesota. So if you could refer to the flyer I gave you as far as the graph at the bottom, you can see that before LTFM was in place, there was a discrepancy. Then, starting 2017, that's when districts could get LTFM, we got close. We were within $148 per APU of having all districts being similar. But since then, LTFM has not increased for non-ALT facility districts, and the effects of the pandemic era construction inflation has been crushing. The graph clearly shows that the Big 28 districts have been able to meet increased needs for revenue to maintain their buildings. Inflation and material costs are hurting all districts, but only the 28 districts can deal with their maintenance issues without going to their general fund dollars or going out to the voters. These dollars should be going towards students and staff. I want to make a statement. Well, alternative facility funding works. That's the bottom line. It works. And all districts should have the same ability to maintain their buildings like the Big 28. So what do we want to see happen with LTFM? We need you to have a path to remove the cap for all districts who are non-alternate, well, just all districts. We would like you to include some things in those big projects like what you're talking about today. We'd like to see roofs, roof repair and replacement, sidewalks and parking lots as part of those big projects over 100,000, so that they don't count towards the cap. That's a big deal to our districts. I would like to note that this was proposed in the governor's budget plan last session, so this is nothing new. And then the third thing is we need to see equalization as part of this. So in conclusion, all districts deserve to have alternative facility revenue to maintain their buildings and not just a select few. House File 3558 is a good start to improving this inequity. If districts can complete their roof projects that are over 100,000 without counting towards the LTFM cap, this would be an improvement in LTFM funding. Thank you for your time today, and please work with us to close these funding inequities in our system.
Thank you, Executive Director Indahar. Next up, we have Seth Butts, Facilities Director of St. Peter Public Schools.
Madam Chair, members. I'm Seth Butts, Director of Facilities for St. Peter's Schools. Last year when I testified, I was at Lake of Woods. It's just made a recent transition from north down to south. I testified last session in support of the governor's plan to highlight some critical infrastructure needs as part of the long-term facilities maintenance program. While I'm disappointed that that didn't come to pass as part of the budget, I'm happy to be here today to support Representative Vernick's bill that would add roofs to the project the school district can levy for over $100,000 in cost. Smaller rural schools have limited LTFM funds that don't go far enough to address deferred maintenance, and we should have additional resources here. Pandemic era construction inflation has taken a huge toll on the cost of materials. By moving bigger roof projects into a larger levy category, a school might be able to free up some of their capped LTFM revenue for other deferred maintenance needs. Doing roofing projects in a piecemeal manner can be more expensive than tackling roof projects in a more thorough manner. At Lake of the Woods, we have it broke down into 18 different sections, and if we piecemealed it, we would be looking at tripling, even quadrupling, just the traveling costs of them coming back and forth for each time that happens. All in all, we have a lot of deferred maintenance needs, and some of them are like just windows in the schools, hallway maintenance, air quality, that's another one, and our schools could use your help. That House File 3558 seeks to provide. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Facilities Director Putz, and congratulations on the move. That is quite a swing, almost like our temperatures lately. So it's nice to see you back again before the committee. With that, members, I'll go to table for comments or questions. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Mr. Is it Indahar, MREA?
Madam Chair, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Representative.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Mr. Indahar, you mentioned equalization. I'm just wondering if you could quickly review the impact that equalization has, the positive impact, and maybe negative too, on between, you know, with rural versus metro and so on. And then also you mentioned equalization is not part of this particular funding, and how does that impact then our local schools?
So equalization is part of LTFM. As a matter of fact, we like the equalization because it's tied to the state tax base. It's at 123%. And thank you for asking this question, because I came from a district that was 70% state-owned. Imagine that, trying to pass something there. And so the bottom line is we do need equalization to put everybody on a similar footing, because the tax base perhaps in Moose Lake is much different than the tax base perhaps in Minnetonka or something like that, where you would be paying way more in Moose Lake for a project than in Minnetonka. So that's a very important piece of this. If you pass it without the equalization, that, you know, the bottom line is a lot of districts would not be able to do this anyhow, because it would just be, you know, they could have just went out for it. So it is very important that equalization is part of it. Did I address all of your questions?
Representative Bennett.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think you did. So I just want to clarify, because I thought I had heard you say equalization was not part of this particular funding, or is that questionable?
Executive Director Intihar.
Thank you. No, equalization is part of LTFM. And I'm going to look at Kathy here. I am correct, correct? I'm sorry.
Go ahead. We'll Madam Chair. Mr. Strom.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Ms. Erickson from MDE is here as well, and you may want on the left side, and you may want to hear from her. In terms of the way the equalization works for LTFM, it's on the first $380. So the projects that are above that are not equalized. And as the fiscal note shows, just a small amount of this would fall into equalization because it'd be for those districts coming up to the $380 per pupil. But as I mentioned earlier, if you're going to move on a bill like this, it's going to have to be essentially levy neutral. So my guess is you would address either this levy or a different levy in order to make it levy neutral. And so you'd be paying the state aid either in this program or another program to keep within your budget target.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. And with that, too, as Executive Director Intihar said, LTFM is a little lighter lift on a levy aid mix because it is adjusted with a statewide net tax capacity, which goes up with inflation. Whereas when we talk about the local operating levy, a referendum that I've carried that bill for 3 years now, and I'm glad you asked about Representative Bennett about equalization, because that's another one of those things that's not sexy but needs to be done. That's actually district net tax capacity, so that purchasing power is becoming less and less because it's at like 2013 numbers. So Representative Bennett did that. Mr. Strom, answer your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Strom. Yes, that did, and thank you, Mr. Intihar. I do know equalization is important, something outside of this realm at this point, but thanks for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we have Representative Purcell. And then we'll have Representative Cresha. If anybody else wants to get on the list, please raise your hand. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank all the folks who've worked on this, especially Representative Vernig, Representative Bakeberg. This is an issue that I have heard repeatedly from at least one of my three school districts. So I just wanted to thank you for bringing this up.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Any other members before I go to Lead Cresha? Seeing none, Lead Cresha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and well, timing is great. Thank you, Representative Vernick, for bringing this issue up, and thank you to MREA. You've been very good with many of these issues and appreciate the advocacy. I don't oppose this at this time. I do have some comments, some observations. I think it's important that we have these conversations. And what I see on this is, you know, one of the things that we very much need to do for school districts is that asset preservation and facilities. And that conversation gets very, very difficult, especially in our rural schools, as you said, and we talk about the imbalance and some of the things that are just difficult for our local smaller schools around the state. And I guess this is a commentary for us in general, and the governor's was brought up a couple times, and I'll focus my ear there. We have a governor who said he would support this and put it in, but he really didn't. I mean, we have, and what's made this difficult for us as legislators, when we go back and talk to our, and today's superintendent day, we're talking to superintendents and school boards, what's made this difficult for us is when a governor says things, and then what we really know is he's pushing things like light rail or a state office building and things that people have no voice on. And while this comes through with no voter approval, and I still believe in the local control, and I believe that school boards and superintendents should have that conversation. But again, when we see these things being pushed through without conversations at the state level, that's assumed at our local levels that's also happening, which creates a very improper perception for local schools in the rural area that they're also doing these behind closed doors. And that's not the case. And so one of the things that we have to do is, rather than just have a governor who speaks to things and goes the other way, he could have done this in his bill last year. He absolutely could have done this when you look at this. And here you are, Representative Vernick. Thank you. Thank you for bringing this back up, and thank you for the support. But we should be debating other things and moving on today, and this should have just been something that was done. So my opposition to this is, again, not the bill and not the work that you're doing, Representative Vernick, and what schools are trying to do with their facilities money, but my opposition is the way things are being done at the governor's office and pushing us through to the very difficult conversations we have to have at home. Good luck with your bill.
Thank you. Representative Vernick, kind of comments.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for the comments. I appreciate that.
As we heard yesterday from student testimony, your zip code shouldn't dictate the quality of education you receive. I want all students and all staff to work and learn in healthy and safe buildings. I want to empower school boards to be better stewards of their public school facilities and determine how they tackle roofing projects in excess of $100,000. This bill would be one step closer to leveling that playing field for districts as they seek to address critical infrastructure needs, such as roof repair and replacement. It would help close that gap between the haves and the haves less. Thank you for your consideration, and I would renew my motion that House File 3558 be laid over.
Thank you, Representative Vernig. We'll renew the motion that House File 3558, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. And with that, members, that's the end of our business here, but I know Representative Jordan had something to say.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm excited to announce that we have some really phenomenal student leaders with us in the audience. And they're behind me, unfortunately, but they are from the Minneapolis Public Schools Citywide Student Leadership Board members, and they help do a lot of what this is just the way the table is set up, and they help advise our school board on issues related to our students and even serve on that board in that capacity. So I think it's great that we have them here, knowing that these will be the students that will someday be sitting in these seats. So welcome to your house.
Thank you, Representative Jordan, for always helping us remember that we center all our decisions on our students, and thank you for being here. Sorry you had to hear such boring commentary about LTFM, and I also see one of our remote testifiers in the audience. Thank you for being here today. And with that, members, we will be meeting tomorrow, same time, same place, and we are adjourned.